And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. Just, I mean, like saving the world. One sound bite at a time. Brian from Decatur says, fantastic monologue. However, it should be directed solely at our government Republican representatives. They're the ones that are failing on a daily basis and make me wonder if they're working for us, themselves, or our enemies. Yeah, it's fractured right now, man. And by the way, I tend to lean towards the Freedom Caucus guys, but I also do not want to see Speaker Mike Johnson done away with right now. I think he's been dealt a pretty tough hand, and he's extremely conservative. He's got great street cred in that regard, and so it's a dicey situation right now up in D.C. Republicans have got to quit finding ways to snipe at each other, start unifying in what they do, and you're always going to you're never going to be at a time when you don't have moderates and conservatives, and I realize there will be moments to basically wield influence and get things done differently, but daggum, we gotta square some of this away. Frank from Huntsville said, not truly on topic, but he wanted me to know that a dance team opted out of a show in Seattle because a group felt threatened by their uniforms. Their shirts represented the American flag. He says, since when do we get to feel threatened about the flag of this great country? Why stay here if the flag of the country you live in threaten you? Frank, I have no idea, man, but I can tell you this. You can't cure stupid. It's just laid on thick right now. We are sipping tea at the Mad Hatter's Tea Party, brother. Jeff from Indiana says, good monologue, Phil, but if Republicans could stick together only 90% as much as Democrats do, it'd be a whole new ballgame. But even though Democrats are many more factions than Republicans, we can't seem to stick together almost anything. Well, that's what I'm talking about, man. That's why we've got to use some of the gaffes. I will say this. Let's take a look at a few things. Part of it's leadership. What happened to the RNC? We got rid of, our previous RNC leader. We had a Mick problem, and we got rid of her. And so she's gone. There's an issue that I think has been removed. I also think, by the way, having Trump at the head of the ticket indicates that if we can put things together, we will have a leadership in place that can rally some people to a cause as opposed to getting some kind of squishmeister in there like if we had had another Mitt Romney running or something. So anyway, all that to say, text lines are open, 833-687-4448. That's 833-68-RIGHT. Text me your thoughts. By the way, I want to reemphasize what I said during my monologue. General Jerry Boykin is truly an American hero. He is, if you don't know of his story, good gosh. I mean, you're talking about somebody who's been there and done that, but not just for the military, which is huge, but also as a man of faith. I mean, he took a lot of heat at times for being a devout evangelical Christian in places where it wasn't that warm and fuzzy. But when they started Delta Force, at first he felt like he was an outcast because he wasn't one of the hard-drinking, bruising guys, although he's a big old dude himself, and he's hardcore. He's hard as woodpecker lips. But he went on to earn their respect to the point that he was even asked to pray before every mission, and that became a tradition. And he actually took a lot of heat when he actually spoke to a church in his uniform while a three-star general. And there was a lot of folks out there saying that, you can't do that. You're in uniform. I got news. He could have cared less. And that's who he is. And he, to this day, he's an awesome speaker. I've had him come speak here in Alabama multiple times. He's been on the show. And listen, that man inspires. And his book, Never Surrender, great read. You'll read all about, rescue missions you didn't know even happened. The raid on Entebbe and things like that led to special operations and then rescuing hostages. And I'm talking, he's there. He was there in all of it. And the book is on my website, rightsideradio.org. You go to it, go to the recommended reading list, and they'll find a copy of the book there. You can click on it. It takes you right to it on Amazon. It's an adventure read and an inspiring story all at the same time. All right. Gary from Decatur says, my dad told me you can minimize stupid, but you can't fix it. That's good. John from Huntsville says, Phil, awesome monologue. I want to say I really enjoyed yesterday's special dad joke episode, even though Kareem kind of crashed the party at the very end. Yeah. And by the way, John, I will tell you that Lee from Huntsville was proud of her win. Says, tell John I know it was a pity win, but I'll take it. So so there's that.
Wait a minute. Lee won yesterday?
Lee won.
Wow.
We had Butters and Lee. She won the day.
Wow.
she didn't win on the day she hosted, but she won.
That's That was a big ordeal there.
That's big. I know. At the very end, apparently it was it got a little tense. Anyway, John, we appreciate you, man. All right, listen, we're going to take a break here momentarily. When we come right back, we'll be starting off on Israel at war. If you did not catch the news last night, and it is news, y'all. If you did not catch the news last night, Israel launched some form of counterattack. The question is, how did it really go? Why do I say that? Because you got Israel in classic fashion's like, what? Something happened? What's going on? Sources are saying, but the Israeli government's not saying. But then there's a lot of surrounding stories on this. What is Iran saying? What just happened at the United Nations? Did we just pass a bill today or almost to get aid to Israel? What the heck? Yeah, we got all kinds of things happening right now that all surround the question of Israel at war. And we've even got an amendment that was proposed to prevent the Biden administration from trying to spend your tax dollars to ever rebuild Gaza. There you go. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right. I mean, like covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. This one right here, Alabama, y'all. And I mean, this show goes like, whew, like way down south of Birmingham, up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and even Mississippi all thrown in just for good measure. Hey, by the way, we have an announcement coming out first of the week. I'm looking forward to it, but Right Side is expanding its capabilities, let's put it that way, and I will let you know more first of the week, but stay tuned for that. First Dipper, Israel at war. Oh, my word. So, listen, this is big doings, and I don't want to minimize this in any way. There's an amazing amount of stuff happening in the Middle East right now that has implications that go well beyond that region. Things that happen on a geopolitical scale, things that happen on a, I don't know, maybe even a biblical scale. But what we're looking at right now is the fact that Israel has been at war since October 7th. They've been at war with Hamas. They're leveling Gaza. I mean, like, it's turning into a parking lot. And rightfully so, because the things that happened when Hamas sent its thugs into Israel and the things they did have left a stain on humanity for, God, just for, it'll be there for generations. The things that people endured and what they experienced and what happened, and there's still some even being held hostage for reasons we can't even begin to fathom. That being said, Israel has been at war now since October 7th. And if you think about it, Israel is a nation under siege at all times. They live surrounded. Kind of like my monologue earlier, they live surrounded. They are constantly in a state of tension. And yet they endure. But this past week, we saw something we had never seen before. Iran, that has been calling for death to Israel and claiming that it would, you know, wipe Israel off the map and fomenting all the unrest by funding Hamas and funding Hezbollah and funding the Houthis. And if you think about it, the same Iran, by the way, who, while I was in Baghdad, was funding militias and teaching them how to best kill U.S. troops. We had something like 648 troops that died because of what's known as the EFPs. I forgot what the E stands for now, but it's basically a force projectile IED that blows right through the side of an armored vehicle as it goes by. Deadly. That's Iran. So yes, Iran has been responsible directly for the death of American soldiers. Iran has been funding and fomenting unrest in the entire region and really around the world. Iran has got its proxies in Syria right now, where U.S. troops are engaged. It's a mess. But what we saw last week was new and different. Iran didn't use its proxies. Iran tried to launch a massive barrage against Israel. Hundreds, like upwards of 400 armed drones, ballistic missiles and land attack missiles were launched that flew across Iraqi and Jordanian airspace to try and hit targets in Iran. Their goal was to saturate a bombing across population centers in Israel to do terrorizing damage. And they were wildly unsuccessful. Wildly. I mean, like, embarrassingly unsuccessful. 99% of them were shot down before they ever even reached Israel's borders. Israel's Iron Dome and David Sling anti-aircraft systems were amazing. And Iran was embarrassed on the world stage. But the fact that they tried to do it meant something too. And Israel then had to make a choice. What do we do now? Do we sit here and idly sit? And the Biden administration was urging Israel to use restraint. Use restraint? You just launched 400 missiles at our people. Use restraint? Well, that's classic Biden administration, because we're being led by cowards right now. And I'm not overly hawkish, by the way. I'm not out there looking for a fight all the time, but I'll be honest with you. If someone swings the first punch, you better be ready to do the knockout blow to end it. So Israel last night did something, and it's still a bit of a mystery, but we know that things began blowing up in Iran last night. Story here on Fox News. Israel strikes sites in Iran in retaliation for the weekend assault. Israel carried out limited strikes in Iran early Friday in retaliation for Tehran firing its barrages of missiles and drones at Israel last Saturday. A well-placed military source has told Fox News the strike was, quote, limited. Well, that's what the Biden administration was asking for. Limited. Sources said the U.S. was not involved, but there was pre-notification to the U.S. from the Israelis. Fox News confirmed there have been explosions in Iran's Isfahan province, which is where Natanz, one of its nuclear facilities, is located. Now, to what we know right now, the IAEA, the International Atomic Energy Agency, they have come out and said the nuclear plant was not hit. So we don't have to worry about a meltdown. We don't have to worry about, you know, some kind of collateral contamination. But the bottom line was, Israel struck near it. That alone was designed to send a message. It is believed that what happened last night was a strike to show Iran that you may not be able to get past our Iron Dome, but we can get past yours. You don't have an Iron Dome. You don't have the same system capabilities that we have. And so Iran just got poked hard. Former Israel Defense Forces spokesman Jonathan Conricus wrote that while Iran appears to be downplaying the strike, he thinks they got the message. And the U.S. Embassy in Jerusalem did issue a security notice Friday morning out of an abundance of caution, restricting its U.S. employees and telling them to shelter in place. Here's the bottom line. It's a mess, but we now have, for the first time ever, Iran and Israel striking from nation to nation. Iran, I don't want to minimize. I don't want to say Iran won't ever get through or cause something to happen. But Iran thought they had it going on, and they got backhanded. Israel came back and launched a limited strike, but it was basically like saying, you can throw a punch at us and we'll block it, but we're going to deck you right in the nose. And they did. They put it on some key strategic sites. Story here on the Daily Wire says subsequent reports said the explosions did happen near a military base where Iranian fighter jets are located. Senator Marco Rubio, vice chair of the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence, said that just moments after the news of the strikes became public that, quote, Israel has the ability to conduct strikes against targets inside Iran without entering Iranian airspace from aircraft over Syria and Iraqi ground. So, but what he's basically saying there is, yep, hey, Iran, Israel can do what they want to do. They have the capabilities, and you don't. We do know this, though. Iran has threatened retaliation, but it's believed right now in geopolitical speak, it's believed right now that they are going to take a hiatus from the fight for the moment. I think they're licking their wounds. Me personally, I think Iran is sitting back going, holy crap, we just did, they blocked it all. How'd they do that? I don't think there's any mystery how they did that. I think God's on their side, for one. But the other part of this is Israel is far more advanced, and Israel lives, like I said, in a constant state of war, y'all. Can you imagine? And Israel is geographically about the size of New Jersey, has a population of 7 million. So they've got land mass that is maybe a third of Alabama's, with 2 million more people than Alabama has in it. I mean, they're packed in. But Israel is a little nation that does a lot of big stuff. They are little in geography, but they are big in their capabilities. Story here from the Jerusalem Post. Israeli officials said an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. They retaliated where they were attacked. Officially, Israel is not going to accept responsibility. By the way, this is what Israel does. It's classic Israel. Something blew up over there? Huh. What do you know about that? Everybody else is going like, we'll take credit. Hey, we did that. We're on the world stage. Just look at us. We blew something up. Israel's like, something blew up. Don't ask us. Everybody knows they did. Israeli sources told the Jerusalem Post that it's unclear why the Pentagon, though, chose to disclose to the American media that Israel had been involved. So what Israel's saying is, yeah, you just did that. Why'd you tell everybody, America? Well, America was the voice piece on this one for them. But like usual, Israel is not declaring itself to the world. Okay, so what are we going to do? Well, right now it is being said that we did not participate in last night's explosions. That we didn't do that. We didn't aid or assist. But I will tell you this. There's a fight going on right now as to whether or not we are going to be able to provide assistance in the future. Part of that fight is the question of funding. And part of that fight is going on literally as we speak, and Congressman Palmer is calling in a few minutes, and we'll get his thoughts on what went down. But there's a real divide in Republicans right now. And the reason why, I think the Republicans, generally speaking, all want to support Israel. They don't want to support Ukraine anymore. They want border security here in the U.S. But in order to get this passed, Speaker Johnson believed that he had to go ahead and advance a package of bills that had Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan all in it without border security. I'm frustrated by that. I am extremely frustrated by it. At the same time, I want aid to Israel. So GOP House Speaker Mike Johnson, according to CBS News, had the foreign aid bills pass on a 9-3 vote out of the House Rules Committee, which means it can go forward. It then came to the floor this morning, and with Democrat support, it got the procedural votes it needed to advance to the House floor. It's a $95 billion package, y'all. $95 billion. $26.4 billion for Israel, $60 billion for Ukraine, $8.1 billion to counter China in the Taiwan area. Conservative hardliners like Thomas Massie, Chip Roy, and others all voted against it. But Democrats joined with the other remaining Republicans and got it passed so we can move forward. I get a little concerned when I see that. Let me take a phone call. Is that Allie? Allie from Athens is on the line. Hey, it's Allie. How you doing?
Hey, I'm doing well, Colonel. And I just wanted to say, number one, I'm distributing your mug as we speak all over North Alabama.
Nice.
And what, yeah, it's my pleasure, sir. And what we chose to write about for this publisher's point is called Thank God for the Dead Sea. And the way that I set up the comment piece with this, I don't know if when we were in the Great Sandbox you ever had a chance to do an LWOP, a Leave Without Pay, and go float in the Dead Sea, but I did. I've gotten the chance to do it from the Jordan side, and I've gotten the chance to do it from the Israeli side, and I'm telling you, you cannot do anything but float when you're in the Dead Sea. And so it was with great pleasure that we published Thank God for the Dead Sea with the picture of the 3.5-story AMOD missile just floating, just popping right in the middle of the Dead Sea. It gave my heart great pleasure, and I do think that we will see more divine interventions, because you cannot mess with the apple of God's eye.
There you go. Thank you, my friend, and you're spot on. All right, have a great weekend, Miss Allie.
You too.
All right, on that note, we're going to take a break. And by the way, I see a couple of y'all texted in. KB from Hartsville squared me away. EFP is an explosively formed projectile. Thank you very much, KB. That was it. All right, you guys, stay tuned. We got more of that. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, wow, making common sense like a superpower. Don't forget, coming up here top of the hour after the next break, we'll have Congressman Gary Palmer calling in fresh off the House floor where they have been voting. Apparently that aid package I just talked about just announced on the news that it is up for a floor vote tomorrow. I suspect that it will pass. So anyway, we'll talk to him about that and see where it goes. Tom from Tanner, Alabama says, Hamas and Tehran need to be taught. Don't start nothing. There won't be nothing. Tom, you are so right. George from Huntsville says Iran exposed itself as a paper tiger with that attack. I think that's true. And the question is, how much of their stockpile did they burn, and where are they now? Stephen from Madison says, wax on, wax off. That's what Israel did. Raven from Russellville says, speed, surprise, and violence of action gets the job done. Yes, indeed. There it is, sir. Jeff from Town Creek, thank you, man. I see your information, so I appreciate that very much. Big Rig, if you wouldn't mind on Jeff from Town Creek writing down with the information he just sent us, I'd appreciate it. Let me jump in here and get a little more stuff of my stack of stuff out before we hit the top of the hour with Congressman Palmer. So just so you know where we are with Israel. So we're looking at voting on aid to Israel, but at the same time, Iran, according to Newsmax, Dateline yesterday, Iran is now mere weeks or maybe days from having nuclear weapons material. Let that sink in. The whole death to Israel, death to America country, the one that just launched 400 missiles and drones against our chief ally in the Middle East, is expected to be or suspected to be no more than weeks or days away from having enough fissile material to create at least two nuclear weapons, according to sources. A 2015 nuclear deal with major powers has eroded over the years, says Newsmax. Iran has expanded and accelerated its nuclear program, reducing the time it would need to build a nuclear bomb. A senior Iranian Revolutionary Guard commander said on Thursday that Iran could review its nuclear doctrine amid Israeli threats. Unclear what he meant, but it didn't sound good, obviously. Its stock of enriched uranium, which had been capped at 202 kilograms, now stands at 5.5 tons. That's a bit of a difference. That's just last known in February. They're now enriching uranium up to 60% purity. They have enough material enriched to that level, and if enriched further, to go to two nuclear weapons. So their breakout time could be close to zero, matter of weeks or days. It doesn't mean they can weaponize it yet, but it means they've got the material they need now just to be, and I would bet they've had concurrent research going on delivery systems as well as enriching the material necessary. The question is how long it would take them to create an actual nuclear weapon. Studies indicate that if they got the fissile material to do it, it could be anywhere from months to a year. The last thing we need is a rogue nation like Iran that has already indicated it's willing to launch missiles against allies unsolicited having nuclear weapons. In fact, I don't think we're going to let that stand. I don't think Israel let that stand. The U.S., by the way, did issue some new sanctions. Story here from the Washington Examiner. U.S. Treasury Department announced a new series of sanctions against more than a dozen people and entities involved in Iran's drone production. Oh, good. A little after the fact, that's like saying, you know, you already, you know, played a whole round of golf. Now we're taking your clubs. But okay. An attempt to cut off Iran's ability to manufacture its missile and drone program to isolate the country on the global stage. 16 people were sanctioned, as well as several other entities. I don't know how to explain that, but that's the Treasury Department. That's the Biden administration. Keep in mind that much of the restrictions that had been put in place by the Trump administration were lifted by the Biden administration and now being to put back in place. Why? Because apparently they worked. And I mean, the Biden administration has given Iran everything it needs to do all of its damage. They're making billions off of oil sales that have been embargoed. We gave them $6 billion in cash with a hostage, you know, exchange. It's unbelievable to me. The Biden administration, in my opinion, bears direct responsibility for much of the unrest we're seeing because their foreign policy is no policy. They have no policy whatsoever except appeasement. Their goal is to try and keep the peace by making everybody happy. Can you please? Just please. Can you not? I don't wish. And then they say, don't. How did don't work out for you? What kind of response is that? Mr. Secretary of Defense, what would you say to your Iranian counterparts if they are thinking about launching attacks on Israel? Don't. Mr. President, what is your message to Iran? Don't. Actually, let me do what Biden says. Don't. That's more like Biden's voice. But the bottom line is this. You cannot possibly appease an enemy like Iran and expect them to just go, okay, thanks for helping us out. We won't do anything mean anymore. Coming up next, U.S. Congressman Gary Palmer. We'll be right back. Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national, sometimes the international. And oh, yeah, like the dude just said, solid conservative and just plain right. Well, welcome to hour number two. And we're about to bring on a guest. Congressman Gary Palmer has been on the show several times. Most of y'all know Congressman Palmer as representing the 6th Congressional District here in Alabama. He's a member of our House leadership and a member, of course, our U.S. delegation from Alabama. Staunch conservative and a Republican. His career prior to heading up to D.C. was as the founder and running for several decades the Alabama Policy Institute, which you hear about all the time on this show. So without further ado, let me just bring on Congressman Gary Palmer. Congressman, how you doing, sir?
I'm good, Phil. How are you?
I'm good. You guys have had your hands full up there in D.C. here of late.
Yeah, it's been pretty messy.
Well, I want to talk about some of the mess, if you don't mind. I could spend all day with you, to be honest, but I guess what's hot on the plate right now are two things, and one is the aid package, which passed its procedural votes, I understand, with Democrat support today to get it across the line, as seems to have split the Republican caucus. But then the next thing is the other split in the Republican caucus is two more congressmen apparently have joined the push to relieve the speaker of his job. So let's take the aid package first, if you wouldn't mind describing that and where you see it going.
Well, there's actually four bills. I'm reading the fourth bill right now. I just got it a little while ago. The other three are aid for Israel, aid for Ukraine, and aid for Taiwan. And obviously the most controversial one of the bills is the Ukraine aid. I offered two amendments to the bill that were not made in order, which so they will not be considered. I've said all along that any additional help for Ukraine needs to be on a loan basis, backed up with collateral from Ukraine. And I offered one of the amendments was to make the entire package a loan, backed up with collateral from Ukraine, and the powers that be decided not to put that in there. So I think that's problematic, and among other things as well. But it also has a section that says any of the funds not spent on the authorized, as authorized in the bill, may be returned to appropriations, in other words, returned to the government. And I offered a simple amendment, just change the may to shall be, and they didn't rule that in order.
Wow.
I'm of the opinion that where we are with our national debt, if there's any money appropriated for a specific purpose and that money's not needed, we shouldn't hand it off to somebody else to spend it on something that is not even relevant to what we were appropriating, and it needs to go back to the government. So the Israel bill, I think part of the problem with that, that some people are going to have with that, is that there's humanitarian aid for Gaza, and it's been misrepresented by some as a $1 billion payment to Hamas. That's not true, because it's very specific in the bill that no money will go to Hamas. That said, I don't support the aid because money's fungible, as you know, and they'll just substitute money from somewhere else, from Iran or someplace like that. So the Taiwan bill, I'm more positive toward. I was in Taiwan last summer in the Philippines and Guam, and looking at where we are in terms of our forces, in terms of being in harm's way and what needed to be done. And having gone through that bill very carefully, it appears to me that that is the most thoughtful one of the three in terms of actually meeting immediate needs for U.S. military. Particularly with facilities. So I'm more positive about that one.
Well, so let me ask
you. And like I said, I'm reading the fourth one.
You got, these are all traveling as separate appropriations bills, is that correct?
Yes, in the House.
Okay, in the House. And so is any of this tied to border security, which I know has been a call by some on the Republican side asking for, if we're going to do anything for Ukraine, it's got to have our own border security being taken care of first. And I've not heard that mentioned. So is that a no?
Well, no. The first bill we vote on tomorrow is a modified version of the bill we passed over a year ago, H.R. 2, the Secure the Border Act. And that bill, the only change that I know of is that we took out the E-Verify requirements from H.R. 2. And I think that's the first bill we vote on tomorrow. And that may impact how some other folks vote on these packages, is whether or not we pass that bill. But here's the thing about that bill. We passed H.R. 2 last March,
yeah,
a year ago, and it sat on Schumer's desk. And I've had reporters stop me and say, well, what are you going to do to give the power to secure the border to the president? And I said, we've already done what we need to do. We passed it out of the House. It's in Schumer's office. All President Biden needs to do is pick up the phone, call his buddy Chuck Schumer, and tell him to pass the bill, and he'll sign it. So I don't know that this changes the dynamic. I don't know that we have any guarantee that Schumer will take up the bill, and it's subject to filibuster, so one Democrat senator could stop the whole process. So I don't know. But we're bringing that bill up, and
well,
that'll be the first one we vote on tomorrow.
Well, and I'm glad it's the first one. I think that's symbolic to get it out the gate first and indicate that we've not forgotten our border security, because I know that's been a real concern in the grassroots. But let me ask you this, because I don't want to run out of time without talking about it. In the middle of all of this is Speaker Mike Johnson, who is trying to balance the weight of the overall body and also within his own caucus. And I know that there are a number of members of the Freedom Caucus, and I generally tend to lean towards Freedom Caucus vote styles and positions and policies. But I'm concerned about this movement right now to oust the speaker again, and I have to question the veracity and the timing of that. But what are your thoughts? Does that have legs? Is that going to happen right now? Are we going to be within 6 to 7 months of an election having to find a new speaker all at the same time?
I sure hope not, and I appreciate the fact that you see the danger that this creates for us. Phil, we're on the verge of World War III, and the speaker is third in line for the presidency. It would be, in my opinion, and with all due respect to my colleagues, insane to do this again. And honestly, I know people think, well, Palmer's gotten all liberal because he supported McCarthy, but we had momentum. We were moving things. And when they removed McCarthy, I mean, we could have waited another 14 months or whatever it was before. And if we didn't like him, we could have removed him in the next Congress. But it created absolute chaos. And it's been taken advantage of by not only the Democrats and the liberal media that are relentless in their attacks on us, but it's being taken advantage of by foreign adversaries, because we can't do anything. And we bring bills to the floor, or try to bring them before, and a lot of my colleagues are voting against bringing bills to the floor. And we're having to do stuff on suspension. And you know, as a former state senator, that when you're bringing stuff by suspension, what you're doing is having to have the other side vote with you to get anything done. So I think it'd be not only a mistake, I think it'd be a tragic mistake to do this again. And well, especially, as you point out, 7 months before the next election.
Well, I agree. And I was not as much a fan of McCarthy as you are, but I'm working at it from afar. I'm the outside looking in. But at the same time, I really do think that what we see in the character and the background of Mike Johnson is somebody that I think could carry the weight for a while and do a good job at it. And he's also, and I recognize the narrow margins within which y'all are working right now. I mean, you've got like what, just a scant few handful of votes that you've got to have a majority. And if you lose any, you have to go to the Democrats. And that's a lose-lose proposition sometimes.
We've got one. And what I'm saying about McCarthy is not a judgment of whether you're a fan or not a fan. It's a judgment of whether or not the timing was right. And when you consider the condition of the country, the issues that we're dealing with here, and then what was going on worldwide, the timing was incredibly poor. In regard to Mike Johnson, he and I knew each other before either one of us ever got elected. He is a godly man, Bill. He is a good man. He asked for people to come in and pray with him yesterday. I was one of them. We went in to pray with him. And he is under absolute assault. His family's under assault. And I'm amazing the guy can still stand up straight with all that he's having to deal with.
Well, and there's more to come, I'm sure, because I don't see the polarization and the dynamics of where we are getting any better. Not only that, but we have national security issues of our own, and we've got a presidency that's doing everything from changing Title IX and depleting our oil reserves. And it's just there is so much in place right now that I think the last thing we need is to decapitate our leadership. Listen, you guys have got a dogfight on your hands. Tomorrow, these votes come to the floor. Are we expecting all four of the appropriations bills to make it to the floor tomorrow, plus the border security bill?
Yeah, the border security bill will be first, and then the other four bills are all supplemental appropriations, and they'll come before individually. And then they'll go to the Senate, and what the Senate does with them is anybody's guess. But I want to comment on what you said about Biden. He is, without question, the most dangerous president and most destructive administration in the history of this country.
Yeah,
it has done enormous damage, not only to our financial situation and our debt, but enormous damage with our allies because they know they cannot count on him.
Yeah, I look at it overall. I mean, just from the broad perspective, whether it be economic policy, foreign policy, military policy, social and cultural policies, I can't find anything where I can go, well, he's got that okay. None of it. I mean, it's like he's taken a wrecking ball to America, and November elections can't hear quick enough. We got to change.
Let me give you a quick example of this real quick. I ran a think tank, so I like to do research. I went back and looked at the Border Patrol's convictions, okay, not arrests, not investigation, convictions under Trump and under Biden. And it was last updated February 13th of this year, so that's 3 years and 1 month of Biden. In the 4 years Trump was in office, they had 11 convictions for murder and manslaughter. Under Biden, in 3 years and 1 month, 165.
Wow.
That's convictions, not arrests, not investigations. Lincoln, Riley's not counted that. Rudy Garcia's not counted in that because their murderers have not been convicted. There were 431 sexual assaults during the 4 years of Trump. 1,210 as of February 13th of this year under Biden. And I just want it, and I know not your listeners voted for Biden, but if they talked to anybody that did, I just want them to think about these parents.
Yeah.
And what Biden said in the State of the Union address, that there are more people killed by illegals. And by the way, I'm not illegal. I'm a citizen.
Yeah.
As some kind of way of saying, well, this all evens out. That is pure bull crap. And I guarantee you Lincoln Riley would be alive today if they hadn't let that guy cross the border.
Well, and all the more reason why I wish the Senate had moved forward on the Mayorkas impeachment, which I wish I had time to dissect with you right now. But I think everybody knows what happened there. That was partisanship.
Yeah.
Well, Congressman, thank you for your time. We're got to leave it there. I'm running long, but blessings on you, and our best to Speaker Johnson, and y'all hold the line. All right.
I'll tell him. Thanks for having me on, Phil.
All right. Thank you. Take care now. We'll run to a break. I did run long on purpose because I wanted to get as much time as we could, but the Congressman, we'll come back and have a very short segment to catch a few text messages and give you the end of this section. But yeah, folks, I'm going to tell you right now, I'm a Freedom Caucus leaner, but I do not agree with the idea of trying to take out the speaker at this particular juncture. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. Got a very short segment here because we ran long with the Congressman, but is that Jeffro? Jeffro from Indiana. What are you doing, man?
I'm getting ready to go through the gauntlet of Nashville.
Oh, so you're on your way back north, though.
I'm already on my way back north, well, thank goodness.
Good deal, good deal. What you thinking, man?
I'm kind of angered at Israel for retaliating against Iran the way they did.
How so?
I think they should have thumped them instead of just having a metered response.
Yeah.
because that's what it's going to take. You know, everybody always says, oh, you know, when Israel does anything, you know, they get attacked from all sides, and when they respond, it's, oh, no, you got to respond in kind, or it has to be a metered response. Well, I want them to respond the same way that these people attacking them is. You know, when they shoot, you know, thousands of unguided missiles into Israel, and they, you know, hit anywhere they just land or whatever, I think Israel should do the same. I think they should respond with unguided missiles into the population and just wherever they land.
Yeah.
You know, that would be a in-kind response.
Well,
they can't do that.
I tend to agree. The only issue that, though, is the logistics of it, because if they were to launch 400 the same way that Iran did, it would deplete the arms that they need to be able to use in their fight currently ongoing in Gaza, and then preparing for responses that could come from other directions like Hezbollah to the north. So I think maybe not 400, but I would have loved to have seen something blow up that was significant and that the world could see, and not just have Iran go, oh, nothing really happened, no business to see here. I think we needed something significant to blow up. And I agree with you. I wish it had been a little bit more, you know, up tempo.
I mean, I think it's going to get down to they're going to have to nuke them before it's over with, because just like they talk about the nuclear power plant in Iran. Why does Iran have a nuclear power plant in an oil-rich nation?
Oh, it's only for electricity. That's all it's for, just electricity. Nothing to see here.
Of course. No, of course not.
No,
I'm
listen,
sure
man.
That's probably a carbon footprint, maybe.
You know, Israel has never confirmed that it has nukes. It's been largely believed that it has them, but it has never confirmed that it has nukes. And I don't, I cannot say a good idea would be to go nuke Iran, because I think that all of the support that Israel's gaining from Jordan and from some of the neighboring countries that are leaning more towards Israel, Egypt even, I think they would be lost. I think they'd lose world support in a big, big way. But I do think they could have done more than what they did.
Yeah, it's like the United States in World War II. You know, we didn't have to drop nuclear bombs on Japan, but it sure did save a lot of lives. I mean, you know, really, the incendiary bombs killed more people than the nuclear bombs did.
Hey, brother, my music's playing. I got to run, dude. I got to run.
Be
safe on the road, buddy. We'll see you. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just covering down on the major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. This one, Alabama. Y'all are talking about this show. Goes like way down south of Birmingham, up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and even Mississippi. All thrown in just for good measure. Hey, by the way, folks, I will just remind you guys, as you hear the advertising playing during the break, just know this, that's part of how Right Side Radio does what it does and stays afloat doing it. So we are a business, unlike some other stations that have the shows that just play their own stuff. We are a standalone entity. We send our show to the stations and they play it for you. They don't own us. So that way we have the ability to do the content we want. That being said, it takes a lot to run a business, and one of the ways we do that is by selling ads. So think about this. We have some of the highest ratings you can get for an afternoon show. And we also, by the way, we are told, well over 30,000 listeners every single week calling themselves Right Side Ruffians. And if you're a ruffian and you've got goods or services you want to sell, well, here's a captive audience full of ruffians that might rather buy from you. So if you'd like to advertise on Right Side Radio, we'd love to talk to you. Just get you the information you need. Go to our website, rightsideradio.org. That's rightsideradio.org. Click on the advertising and contact tab, send us a message, and Lauren from Right Side will contact you in a heartbeat and give you all the info that you need to be an advertiser. We would love to have you on the team. Advertise on Right Side. Go to rightsideradio.org and send us a message. A couple of text messages real quick. KB from Hartsel just texted in. He's the one that squared me up a little while ago. I couldn't remember the type of or the name of the IED that Iran sponsored or helped train on. It's called an EFP. It's called an explosively formed projectile. And then he just texted back, said, enjoy your show, Colonel. Thanks for your service. He was a retired sergeant first class with 3 tours in Iraq and 2 tours in Afghanistan. Man, appreciate you, KB. Thanks for your service, man. This is Dustin from Hillsboro. If Iran launched over countries other than Israel and one of the weapons they shoot down is nuclear, doesn't that rain nuclear material down in the country? Yeah, it does. It absolutely does. And I'm sure there was debris falling all over Jordan. And by the way, Jordan shot down a bunch of them too. Jordan and U.S., I think F-16s were used to help strike down some of the drones that were flying. So we definitely had interaction from other countries. But yes, you are correct. If they were to launch some type of fissile material and it was shot down over Jordan, that would definitely mean radioactive material. Plus, think about this. Israel's so small. You launch a nuke in Israel, the radiation, the fallout, is not going to be contained. It's not like it'll stay within the borders of Israel. There will be a plume of radioactive fallout that will go well beyond the borders. It's way too small for that to be an effective. Even a tactical nuke with a low yield capability is going to go far and away beyond the target zone. So it would create, and that's the other thing. You know, they can, what's it take to make a nuclear device? Well, it takes more than what Iran has right now, allegedly. What's it take to make a dirty bomb? You can, do they want to do that though? Here's the other thing. Keep in mind that one of the greatest shrines in all of Islam is in Jerusalem, the Dome of the Rock, the Al-Aqsa Mosque. And that is something that's considered sacred in Islam. It's one of the top tier sites in all of Islam. And so if that were to be covered in radioactive dust, that would mean that they just struck at their own faith in a sense. They would be condemned for it, Iran would. But anyway, there's that. Got a new texter in the line. Need to get your name. Says I think his name is Larry. If you get his stuff for me, man. He says, Phil, great interview with Palmer. We were in D.C. last week for our national legislative conference. Had 20 of us from Alabama, and he took us all on a Capitol tour at 8 p.m. and it lasted until 10:30. He was fantastic with all of his historical knowledge. Thank you for that, Larry. And by the way, Larry, tell us where you're from so we can put you in the system. Thanks for texting. Yeah, Congressman Palmer's a class act. He really is. He's one of the good guys. And I'm familiar with his work because, like I said, I used to be, after I left the State House, I did 3 years of work with the Alabama Policy Institute, which is where this show sprang out of. And the Alabama Policy Institute was founded by Gary Palmer. He's a good one. So thank you, Larry. We're glad to have you in the show, and text us more often. All right, one more piece of this before I switch dippers. And if you're welcome to text in or call in, by the way, 833-687-4448. That's 833-68-RIGHT. One more piece I wanted you to know I forgot to mention in my last batch there in dipper number one. There was a vote this week at the UN to determine whether or not Palestine would be recognized as a nation state for the UN membership. Story here on the Times of Israel. It was the U.S. that did veto it. So on the National Security Council, the UN Security Council, the U.S. has veto authority. We're one of the permanent members of the Security Council. So there are rotating seats, but there are a number of the big nations that do have permanent seats, U.S. being one, and we do have permanent veto authority. It can be unilateral. We can veto anything we want to by our own vote. It doesn't require a majority or a consensus. So we were the sole vote that stood in the way of basically Hamas being allowed to become a member. Well, no, Phil, it's called Palestine. Yeah, it's Palestine, but right now it's Hamas, and you know it. The final tally, it says, showed that the Biden administration, though largely failed in its efforts to gain support. Here's the thing. You may look at that and go, oh, U.S. got a victory. Is it really? Is it a victory when France and Japan and South Korea and Slovenia, all of which are supposed to be our allies, disregarded our efforts to have them vote against it with us and not leave us standing alone? And what did they do? They voted for Palestine, meaning the Biden administration cannot even negotiate with our allies, y'all. Think about this. The UN, which is sitting right up here in friggin' New York City, the UN, and we've got France and Japan and South Korea and Slovenia all voting in favor of a resolution that was submitted by Algeria, of all things, to recognize the Palestinian state for the purpose of nationhood and UN status. Well, we've been opposing this for years. But I will point out, the U.S., we were trying to rally people to be counted on our side in the vote. Nobody would. What does that tell you about the Biden administration's ability to conduct foreign policy? If you can't even get your allies to vote on something we've all voted against in the past, and they're just willing to go ahead and go, yeah, sorry, dude, we're not with you this time. Good luck with that. You know you got it. You can vote for yourself. Just vote for yourself. It'll be all right. So it shows us standing by ourselves at the UN. It won. I mean, we kept Palestine from becoming a state. But Biden cannot even negotiate with France, with Japan. We have military bases in Japan. We have protection agreements with both countries. France is a member of NATO. We can't. Where is Antony Blinken? What does that man do for a living? This boggles my mind. We had a 12-member Security Council voting in favor of granting the Palestinians full UN member status. The UK and Switzerland abstained. What? So Great Britain's not even standing with us. They're like, we're not going to vote. We'll stay out of it. We're going to abstain. Well, abstentions go with the majority, I guess, technically. But you know what that means? They weren't willing to cast a vote. So France and Japan and South Korea voted against us. UK and Switzerland chose not to help us. The others were like, game on, dude. Let's get Palestine in here. And the Biden administration's like, dang, okay, we'll just do it ourselves. Leaving themselves standing there flat-footed, having to do it by themselves because they can't even rally their own allies. That's where we are right now. This is almost like a mini rant, but that's where we are right now. The Biden administration has so devastated the image of the United States on the world stage that even our allies will not side with us on the simplest of votes. And that is maddening to me. It is absolutely nonsense. It is a shame. It is a blight. We're one of the founders of the United Nations. We host it on our soil. We're talking about South Korea, who we saved from North Korea. We're talking about Japan, who we rebuilt after World War II and became great allies and we do massive trade with. We're talking about France, who we saved in World War II and who's a member of NATO with us. We're talking about the UK, who we stepped in and rescued when the Nazi Germany was raining buzz bombs down on their cities. We're talking about Switzerland. Switzerland. How much trade do we do with Switzerland? And none of them will stand with us for the simplest of votes to say that, no. Look, you've got corruption and you've got mismanagement in Palestine right now. You got the West Bank, which is just basically, you know, thuggish and sort of getting by. And you've got Gaza, where Hamas has got 400 miles of underground tunnels from which they launched attacks on Israel, killing over 1,300 Israelis just 6-7 months ago. And we cannot even get our allies to say, yeah, we're with you on that vote. Don't worry. They're all like either we're staying out of it or we're voting against you. Meanwhile, Biden's flat-footed and can't do anything except try to figure out how to create stories about his uncle being eaten by cannibals. What the heck was that even about? That's where we are on the world stage right now. Listen, I just ran that thing all the way to a break, so I'll take a break right now. I'll come right back, and then I'll kick off the next dipper. Yeah, we're learning a brand new word today. Codswallop. You ever heard of codswallop? Codswallop, man. Add that one to your repertoire and use it at the next Sunday school party. You'll be a hit. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We'll be right back.